the Cadillacs. And you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
This is Mike Miller, and you're here with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my pleasure to have as my guest, doo-wop and R&B royalty, Lois Harris Powell from the Chantels, original founding member. Hi, Lois. How are you?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing beautiful. I'm here in sunny Florida. Of course, I miss the Northeast because, you know, that's where I was born and raised, but I don't miss the snow and the cold.
Oh, well,
you know,
I like the seasons.
I hear you. So let's get right back to the roots. You were born in the Bronx, is that correct?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, now whereabouts in the Bronx were you?
Well, I lived initially on Union Avenue, then Forest Avenue.
Uh-huh.
And then I moved, when I was 12, I moved up more north and more east.
Uh-huh.
Kind of where the Bronx River Parkway and the Cross Bronx Expressway intersect. And the house I lived in was actually, the Bronx River Parkway was the back of it. And when we first moved, we thought that the parkway was our backyard because there was all this green grass. There was no fence.
Yeah, I remember those days.
It didn't belong to us. But it wasn't ours.
I was a Parkchester kid. Parkchester was great. We had the little quadrants there. And believe it or not, Shari Lewis was our babysitter for a while. She was like probably 13 or 14, and we were like 7 and 8 or three and 5. And she was, you know, she was kind of weird then. I think she was talking to her hand. I think she had a sock on her hand then, but it didn't have eyes on it.
Oh, wow.
True story. True story. We went to PS 106.
Uh-huh.
And then what's funny about it is that all those years later, I grew up and I, you know, wended my way into education. And I was a dean at Castle Hill Junior High School, 127, for 30 years.
Yeah.
And back to the scene of the crime.
Wow. Castle Hill. That wasn't that far from where I lived.
Yeah. You know, well, you know, what's really funny is... you know, Castle Hill Avenue, my parents met at Castle Hill Pool, and the way we all learned to swim, the cousins, is they threw us in the 8-foot pool, and if we swam, we were great, and if we drowned, too bad.
Oh, my Lord. Wow.
So,
well, I know the area well.
It was great. Parkchester, we had Suicide Hill. We had, and up the block on Castle Hill, we had Lambiese's Italian Ices. We had where my mother used to go off of Starling Avenue to the butcher, and you'd pick out a chicken, a live
right.
chicken, and you'd come back 2 hours later, and they would pluck it for you and,
uh-huh.
and behead it for you. You know, I mean, you know, those are my memories.
Wow.
You know, tough stuff.
Wow.
But anyway, so getting back to Lois, did you have a musical family?
I did. My aunt was a piano teacher, and she taught piano lessons at home. And we had a three-family house when we moved from Forest Avenue.
Right.
We had a three-family house. My mother had the upstairs apartment. My aunt was in the middle apartment, and my grandparents were in the basement apartment. And my aunt had many students, some who became famous. And
wow.
She taught Jackie and Arlene.
Oh.
And actually, she knew that Arlene could sing, so she would have these little pageants around Christmas time, and she would showcase her students who not only played the piano but had another talent, like
wow.
playing violin or whatever. And so she did showcase Arlene a couple of times. And Jackie took piano lessons. And so some of the times we would rehearse in my dining room because we had a piano, upstairs in my mother's house, apartment. And we had a piano down in my aunt's house.
Right.
So there were pianos all over.
That reminds me of the old Steve Martin line where we used to walk into the room and say, "Will you hand me that piano, please?"
So my father played violin, and then my sister went to Juilliard Prep for piano.
Oh, wow.
She was a piano major, and I went for a dance. I studied with Pearl Lang.
Uh-huh.
And then I was really going to switch to voice, and then I don't know what happened in between, but it never happened.
Right.
But I took piano lessons as well, but I didn't take lessons from my aunt because, you know, we wouldn't practice for her.
Right, I hear you.
So we went to somebody else.
Uh-huh.
Initially, I took piano lessons at school, at elementary school where we all met.
Right.
And I took lessons from Sister Richard Marie for a while. She was our choir director, and I think Jackie took lessons from her, too, for a while.
Wow. So you guys were a family, I mean, you know, going back right to knee-high,
yeah.
And not only that, you know, having piano and having that point of reference when you sing, because I'm playing guitar since I'm 8 years old, you know, having that point of reference really helps you with your vocals and your arranging. I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because you know where you are in the chord. You know, you can
mm-hmm.
say, well, here's the chord, here's the triad, you know, here are our notes, you know, and if we
mm-hmm.
want to invert the second tenor, we can just, here it is in the chord. It's not like, you know, when people don't know the music, it's a long night.
Right. And, so Sonia was one of the Star Time TV kids.
Oh, wow.
She was, she sang, and I think she danced as well. And so that was kind of interesting. So we all mostly had, and then Renee's parents were both, her mother sang. She was a jazz singer.
Oh, my goodness. I had to ask.
I think her father played an instrument and
uh-huh.
might have sung too. But, I mean, we all came from some kind of music background.
Unbelievable. I mean.
And had an appreciation for it, even though, you know, we didn't listen to rhythm and blues or anything on the radio. We
right.
had to do that in secret. But, I mean, we were allowed to listen to classical music
wow.
and make-believe ballroom. That was it.
The make-believe ballroom? I do remember that show. That's very interesting. Yeah, so, you know, me too. I mean, my mother, I guess, threw a little transistor into my little bed just to shut me up. I mean, I had a little Motorola. And I used to find Jaco mm-hmm. and Symphony Sid and all those, you know. And I knew the words to all the Flamingos mm-hmm. and the Harptones tunes when I was like 6 years old. And I don't know how they got there.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever it was, you know, I kind of knew them. And you girls, The girls, you know, I can call them the girls now because you've been together now since you're in elementary school. They were all good Catholic school girls.
Right.
Yeah, you know, so I mean, you had that upbringing too. Look, I'm Jewish and my two daughters, you know, my wife was Irish Catholic and they all went to Catholic school too. And my daughter used to roll up her skirt. My daughter went to St. Raymond's, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah.
And she would say to me, and I was the dean at 127, and I would say, I'm picking you up and taking you up to Connecticut, you know, because they didn't live in Connecticut. And you know, the father would say to me, no, you're not, because your daughter Tara has detention, and you can sit in my office and we'll talk if you want. We'll smoke a cigar. He said, but she has detention, and that's the way it is. I said, yeah, but come on, you know, we only see each other like, you know, twice a month. He said, nope, she has detention. And that was, he was tough, man.
Wow.
You know.
And, yeah, once we got out of St. Anthony's, then we, you know, I went to St. Helena's High School.
I
went to St. Catherine Academy my first year in high school, and I should have stayed there, but I left because I didn't want to take French.
Right.
And so I went to St. Helena's.
Well, that was the sister school to St. Raymond's, and, you know, 127 was right down the block.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay, I got it.
And, I ended up there, and that was interesting. And the girls were still, let's see, Jackie, I think, had originally gone to Cathedral.
Right.
And I'm not sure about Arlene. She might have gone to St. Michael's, but I'm not sure.
I know that school, too.
And then eventually, you know, once the group got going, then they got pulled out and went to professional children's school.
Right, right, right.
And I was in my senior year. I wasn't even 17 yet, but once Maybe hit and we started to go out on tour,
right.
That was the beginning of my senior year.
Wow, so you started very early, yeah.
Yeah, and the nuns wouldn't let me my mother wouldn't let me come out, and the nuns wouldn't let me out.
Well, I know.
They said I only had, you know, like 9 months of school.
Well,
and,
yeah,
you know, for me to graduate on time,
yeah,
you know, so that was a little devastating.
Well, there's always that. So when did you girls start singing together? I mean, can you remember the first time when you looked at each other and you said, you know what, let's be a group? And what kind of material were you doing at that time?
I honestly do not remember. I just know that we were all in the choir. And Arlene had started a group. She had different girls at different times.
Right.
I guess trying them out. And eventually, I guess Jackie suggested me. And so I don't even remember trying out. I just remember I have relative pitch.
Right.
And I had a very clear high soprano voice.
Uh-huh.
And so that's kind of when we got together. I believe Sonia, Jackie, and Renee were already part of the group, and then I came in, and we started singing, and, you know, we had friends. I had a cousin who sang with a guy group, and I can't even remember their names, but they used to stand on the corners and sing,
right.
And we used to, you know, say, well, if they could sing, we could sing.
Right.
And that, you know, so we would do the same thing, and we'd sing any place we could, and our harmony was always strong, mainly because of choir. I mean, Sister Marie was very, very particular about how we sang, and we had won so many contests as elementary school choir. We always won the regional division, and then we went and did national at Catholic University and always came home with a trophy.
So none of you girls were hiding. You know how in the choir, you know, you have those that really belt it out, and then you have those that kind of hide?
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
We just sang.
Cool.
You know, we sang 3- and 4-part harmony.
Wow.
Mostly, and much of it was in Latin. And,
uh-huh.
You know, some of it was not.
Right, and the vowels are different, too. So, you know, you get you get a very well-rounded, you know, education that way. And so you girls, all of the girls, were evolving at a very young age. That's fantastic. But let me ask you this. Did you go out and sing on the street corners?
Oh, absolutely.
You did.
Street corners.
Cool.
We sang PS23, PS99, those are the public schools, and they used to have all these contests for and we would go and we'd win, and we would sing in the subway. Remember the subway when they used to have the little that entryway? It was like a little vestibule.
Oh, sure.
Before you went into the main, where the seats were.
Yep.
We'd always stand out there and sing. When we went down, we would go down to Gay Blaze for roller skating.
Right.
Because we could go down to the movies if we went in a group, and we could go skating if we went in a group.
Right.
And so we would sing our way on the way down and sing on the way back home. Sometimes people would clap. Sometimes they would just look at us like, what are they doing?
Yeah, but you know what that gives you? That gives you the guts and the fortitude to go out and sing in mm-hmm. front of people just impromptu. And, you know, it kind of takes that edge off, and you become seasoned already because, mm-hmm. you know, they're not expecting anything, and all of a sudden here you are. But that's a wonderful thing. I know I've done that, you know, with groups when I was younger, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we used to go to, I had an a cappella group that we were signed to Relic Records, you know, when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to go to Jones Beach and stand on the towel and draw 1,000 people. And, you know, go to the mall and sing, and they would run out and say, people are not shopping. Go away.
Yeah, so, you know, we didn't have malls and all of that at that time, but we just found, wherever we were, if we went someplace, we would just break out in song.
You had nooks and crannies.
Yeah, you know where we were.
And you also had so many groups that were talented that came from the Bronx. I mean, there were a lot of groups from the Bronx mm-hmm. that sang some pretty good stuff. Now, let me ask you this. So, all having musical backgrounds, who arranged your stuff? And you know, when you wanted to work out a tune, I guess when you're singing for a while, you naturally fall into it. But were you all involved in arranging your material?
Yeah, we most of us liked jazz.
Right.
And so we would hit a chord that sounded pretty jazzy,
uh-huh.
and we would just like fall out laughing and say, wow, that was fabulous, let's do that again.
Right.
So, I mean, we were always experimenting, we were always working with harmony, because we really, you know, the girls were young. I mean, when you think about it, 16,
right.
15, 14, 12.
Right.
So they really weren't, they didn't know that much about any of the street music or any of the music,
right.
The recordings that were there.
Right.
Renee knew the jazz stuff because that's what she heard at home. And,
right.
I knew classical stuff, that's what I heard at home. But like I said, I mean, I knew who Johnny Mathis was because when he came out with Chances Are, I mean,
right.
everybody listened to that. That was
right.
the biggest hit.
Right.
So, we tried to harmonize that and some of the other songs that we heard.
Hey, Mike, John Mathis.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm okay, thanks. It's Johnny Mathis, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
We would just break into song around those kinds of popular songs that we heard.
Gotcha.
And then we would, some of the stuff we would make up and like steal from the guys that were singing on the corner.
I gotcha.
And we'd hear something, oh, that sounds really good. Let's see if we could do that. And then we would do it and take it a step further.
Cool. Well, I have a technical question because, you know, I'm thinking to myself now, I've heard the Chantels sound, and of course, I've dug in even a little deeper since we spoke, and I've listened to some of the stuff that are in the Chantels archives. Being a music person, you know, I hear certain things that a lot of people don't hear as far as the way it's constructed and the approach and everything else. You got a lot of high, hard soprano voices, and it's very distinct. But putting a tune together, you have the lead, and then you have the triad behind the lead, you know, so you either have a second tenor, first tenor inverted, you know, which is a soprano, and you can flip it up and even take it up a third. But then again, you have that fifth girl. So she's obviously not singing bass. So that girl is either floating somewhere on top, or she's doubling one of the other harmony parts. Am I wrong?
Well, usually I was singing the highest, and a lot of times I was not. I was either doing a riff or doing something
gotcha.
that would harmonize with what everybody else was singing.
But
Renee and Jackie would switch doing a bass line. And, I mean, they'd be really low.
Right.
And they would mimic what they heard with the guy group.
Gotcha.
And some of the things. Like, actually, in what evolved into He's Gone,
right,
there was a bass line that Jackie used to do. And she would start with the do.
Be-do, be-do, be-do.
And she would do that, and then we would do something around that.
Gotcha.
And so each of us was able to do something and make it fit.
Right. No, I got it. Because, you know, I you've heard a little taste of the group that I was singing with for a bunch of years, the Harmony Street Girls. And, of course, you know, the Chantels and the Shirelles were like their heroes. And, you know, you don't approach any of the Chantels material unless you can sing. If you can't sing, you leave it alone. And, you know, the fact that they were able to work out some of the Chantel stuff and sing it, and I think do it justice, you know, was really thrilling to them. And they just were in awe of all the Chantel stuff, because they were kind of an entity in themselves, the three ladies. You know, we would wind them up and put them out by themselves during a show and let them sing four or five tunes on their own. They could have been their own group. And, you know, I think they drew a lot from a lot of the Chantel's material. You know, they had somewhere to go with it.
So. And like I said, when I heard their version,
right,
it was really very refreshing. And it's interesting because unless you go on YouTube, or, you know, some people are not that savvy,
right,
you know, particularly from my generation,
right,
you don't know what's out there. I mean, so that I heard, and obviously because they're women and they have, you know, their voices
right.
are trained, and so the harmony sounded really tight, really close,
right.
and really, really, really good. But then I was scrolling at one point just to see what was out there with us.
Right.
And there was three girls. It was a high school band.
Right.
And these three girls, and they had on these cute little dresses. And they did Look in My Eyes.
Wow.
And it was really, really, and the feedback that they got was, well, it's not the originals, but it wasn't bad.
No. I got
and,
you.
And so it was really sweet to see that, you know, kids were singing our music. It was
Oh, absolutely. Beautiful. That's the biggest compliment in the world, mm-hmm. to know that it's still alive and that, you know, what you created, you know, is still alive. And you want to know that the generations after you are carrying on the music, because, you know, that's really what it's all about. I mean, to me, it always is this. And, you know, I'm going to tell you this, and you know that it's true. I've been in so many groups, and, you know, what happens over the 40 or 50 years is that there's all this stuff that goes on, you know, the stuff, the group stuff, and, you know, You looked at me 40 years ago and I said this and you said that and what's going on and you know, and all of that. And really and truly, the important stuff is when you're on stage, you're in the middle of the song, you're in your zone, you're singing, it's a spiritual experience, the people are loving it, and at the end they look at you with loving eyes and they clap and they say, thank you for giving that to us, and they appreciate it. But that moment in the middle of the song, that's what it's all about. You cannot reproduce that or create that. And if you haven't experienced it, you're missing something. My feeling. That's my feeling.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, otherwise, I mean, you know, once you do it, I mean, the perfect example is you do it and you do it and you're successful and people love you and then you stop doing it. And then one by one, everybody that's done it gets back to it and says, you know what? I need to do this again.
Mm-hmm.
You know. It's the way it is. Let's move along and talk about the group is now getting serious and they're singing out there and people are hearing them and whatever. And then all of a sudden you get discovered. I know Richard Barrett was involved in that. And
right.
Instead of my asking you, why don't you tell me that story about how you evolved into the Chantels?
Well, so, okay, so now we've been singing for a while and we've been doing the public school talent show thing and we've been doing really well with that. And then we wanted to branch out a little bit and go to shows and see if we could, you know, get anything from seeing people on stage. So a couple of times, I think we went to the Apollo, and then, you know, really wasn't something that we could do on a regular basis because our parents just wouldn't let us.
Right, I hear you.
So one day we decided we would all dress alike, and that was part of the talent show thing.
Right.
And we went down to the city because we knew there was a big rock and roll show. I cannot remember the name of the theater, but I don't think it exists anymore.
Right.
And we, for the sole purpose, we knew the Valentines were going to be there, and we knew some of the other groups that we had now, you know, gotten to know pretty well just by hearing them on the radio or whatever.
How did you go? Did you go by subway?
We went by subway.
I was going to ask if you took. I was going to ask if you took the woo woo train, but then I said, "Shut up, Mike."
we took the train in, and we got out, and we were walking, and we were headed for the theater because we figured if we find where backstage was, we'd get back there and get some autographs.
I know the deal.
So, as we were walking on Broadway, some guy stopped us and said, "Oh." Are you sisters? And we said, no, we sing. So he said, well, I could probably do something for you. Why don't you come up to my studio? So we figured safety in numbers. We said, okay, so we'll go. And we went up, and he had a piano up there, and he started to ask us, you know, what do we sing? And we were getting ready to break into the song, but I happened to look out the window, and I saw Richard Barrett, Dave Clowney, I think, was his last name.
Right, Clowney,
And Ronnie.
Wow.
So I said, oh, my God, it's the Valentines. So they all ran to the window, and I think I said something like, hey, stuck up, can't you speak?
Uh-huh.
And they looked up, and Richard said, you know, motion, come down. And we told the guy, well, we got to go.
We got a better offer.
Well, and we went downstairs, and he noticed that we were all dressed alike. And,
and
so he said, well, how come you all dressed alike? So we said, well, could we sing?
Ooh.
And he figured that out, I guess, because we were up in whatever that studio was.
Right.
I think the Brill Building. And so
the Brill Building.
We broke into song.
Yeah.
And we sang one song. I think we sang two.
Uh-huh.
And he said, oh, well, that's not too bad. I could probably do something for you.
Oh.
And we said, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I didn't lie to Frankie Lyman. And we knew he discovered Frankie.
Right.
So I guess Arlene gave him her phone number, and he said, well, I'm going to call you. And we were kind of doubtful. We said, yeah, do we ever hear from him?
Yeah.
And it seemed like years, but it must have been maybe a few weeks.
Or 3 days.
And he, in fact, did call
Arlene
and spoke to her parents
and
wanted to set up a meeting. So we all went to the meeting and sat down, and he talked about the deal and the shows and the records and the this and the that.
Right.
And he said, but he had a person he wanted us to meet, but he wasn't going to take us until he felt we were ready.
Okay.
And so that meant that he was going to work with us at Arlene's house and
gotcha.
Go over this and that and the other. And so we did that for a few weeks. And
then
when he said we were ready, when he thought we were ready, he took us to meet George Goldner.
Right. And of course, George did a lot of things for a lot of people. I know, you know, Terry Johnson is a good friend of mine. He lives not far from me, and we get together with them all the time. And, of course, you know, the Flamingos were with George.
Right.
Not too shabby.
Yep. And eventually we did do a bunch of shows. We were always booked with the Flamingos and Billy Ward and the Dominoes.
Wow.
And those were our two favorite groups. And at the time, Buzzy played guitar and wrote some of the songs for them. But he wasn't Terry. He was Buzzy. So
right, I know. Yep.
That's what they called him.
Hi, this is Terry Johnson of the Flamingos, and you're listening to Mike Miller and the Harmony Street Show.
And it was really the others, the cousins and the brothers.
Right.
And Jake and Zeke.
Right.
And so we did meet George, and then he decided that he wasn't going to put us on Gone Records. He was going to create a whole new label and whatever, but we had to keep working until it was perfected and whatnot. And so that's what we did. We rehearsed and we rehearsed until it was time to really cut the record. And it was He's Gone and The Plea were the first records that we did.
Right.
And there was a little bit of noise with that, and you know, of course, my mother was not impressed at all. Oh, we're going to make the record, and she looked at me like I was at three heads.
Yeah.
Really, because that wasn't something she was familiar with. And
right.
So it was, yeah, okay. And that was it. There was no excitement, no anything. And so we continued to work and work and work, and then Richard took us to the Apollo, and he had convinced, I think it was, I want to say it was Jocko, but I'm not positive.
Right.
This is Jocko, engineer aboard the big rocket ship show, the fastest moving show on the radio, saying, greetings, salutations, ooh, Papa Do, and how do you do? You ready for the big ride to your race from outer space, huh? What a good deal. Button your lips, comb your knowledge box. It'll be transcribed, recorded, and topped. Now, close the hatches. Passengers, fasten your seatbelts. Prepare to blast. Minus 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Who was having a show, and to put us in just as a filler, not, we weren't on the headline, and
right.
We weren't in the, nobody even had a, there wasn't a picture of us, there was nothing.
Gotcha.
We were going to go out and sing. See how we did. And we went out and we sang. Reuben Phillips was the band, band leader, and it was the house of Reuben Phillips band. And so we, and I don't even remember what we sang, but whatever it was, it went over very well.
Was it scary going out there?
It was very scary because we knew that, you know, if they didn't like you at the Apollo,
right?
You know, they would let you know in no uncertain terms. And then we did a Murray the K show there.
Yep.
And that was a show that Bobby Darin was on.
I think I was at that show.
And Bobby didn't sing because he had laryngitis.
I think I was at that show.
So he and Murray the K did some kind of weird
right.
skit and whatever. And we were in the dressing room because Richard used to lock us up in the dressing room and guard it.
Right.
Because our parents had said, if anything happens to those kids.
Right.
So we were in the dressing room and we were singing some of our church stuff. So we were singing a Latin song that is usually sung around Easter.
Right.
And Murray the K heard it and said, oh, sing that. Go out, when you go out, I want you to sing that song.
Wow.
We said, oh no, we're not singing that. Are you kidding? They'll throw eggs at us. They'll laugh us off the stage. We're not going to sing that. And he said, no, really, really, I think you should sing that.
So
anyway, we did sing it, and it was, you could hear it, you know, it was just so quiet.
Wow.
And everybody just listened, and by the time we got through, I guess we sounded so angelic, they clapped, and we said, oh my God, they liked it. We were shocked. We were shocked.
Wow.
And then we, you know, we took off and went back up to the dressing room, and then it was, you know, the regular whatever. And we had done, we had to do, you know, with 5 shows during the week.
Oh, please. You know, I remember the Brooklyn Fox. You went, it was the movie at like 10 o'clock, then the show, then the movie, then the show, then the movie, then the show. Now, what we used to do is we used to go down there and some people would leave after the show. We would keep moving down because they didn't throw you out because, you know, and the other thing was everybody smoked at the Brooklyn Fox, and those all in the audience. So I said to Anthony one time, I says, how the heck did you go out there and breathe all that smoke? Because all everybody in the first 5 rows were smoking. He says, are you kidding me, man? I used to put out the cigarette on the sole of my shoe before I went out to sing and blow smoke back at them. I said, no kidding. He says, yeah, Brooklyn Fox, telling you the truth. I said, okay.
Hi, this is Little Anthony of Little Anthony Imperials, and you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
Murray was something else.
Mm-hmm.
Murray was something else. Well, you know, the second Jackie was Jackie Zeman from General Hospital. Jackie the K, who was his wife.
Okay.
And then when she was gone, he married his second Jackie, and it was Jackie Zeman from General Hospital. And when Murray got sick, she left him.
Wow.
True story. And you know what happened? He met another Jackie from New Jersey. He had another Jackie. And this particular Jackie, he never married her, but she was with him when he passed away. Believe it or not. True story. Because I'll tell you how I knew. Somebody introduced me to this Jackie girl. We got to talking and she says, you know, I was with Murray, you know, and I says, get out of here. Then she showed me all the pictures and this and that. And I says, wow, all those Jackies.
You know,
unbelievable. But I'm assuming you did the Paramount and the Brooklyn Fox, and you did the Dick Clark Show, of course, and you probably...
I did not do the Dick Clark Show.
Really?
The girls did.
Uh-huh.
Because by then, now, we were making noise, we were charting.
Right.
And so that was when the consensus was that the girls had to go on the road.
Uh-huh.
And do these shows,
right.
And so they couldn't go to the regular schools anymore.
Right.
So they got pulled out, went to professional children's school down in the city.
Right.
And the nuns had said no, and my mother said no.
Huh?
And I was totally devastated.
Oh, I can imagine.
And so what happened was because they were only showing four girls singing now.
Right.
Then they had to take new pictures.
So
that was also more salt into the wound.
Right.
For me. And when they were in New York, I would go down, like the Apollo, I'd go down from school and do the last two shows.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then on the weekend, I could do the whole weekend, the whole seven shows on the weekend.
I gotcha.
And then during Christmas vacation, I would be on the road with them.
Right, I got
but
you.
The pictures would still be the pictures of four, so that was a little hard for me.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sure that it was.
And I still recorded with them, so
right.
I would go down to the city and meet them at the studio and you know rehearse and record and rehearse and do whatever.
Right.
Until I graduated in 1958.
Gotcha.
From St. Helena's and. By then I was 17, and I said, well, I have one more year, and then I'll be 18. And
right. You know, I can sing when I want.
So that was what happened was, I rejoined the group full time, and then we got new pictures taken, and then I was on the road with them.
They didn't have Photoshop in those days.
Right. So then we did, we did the Paradise Theater in the Bronx.
Yeah.
We did the Apollo. We did,
The Lowy's Paradise. I remember the Lowy's Paradise.
Right?
And yeah, for sure.
We did, the Royal Theater in Baltimore. All those famous theaters, the Uptown Theater. We were always at the Uptown Theater in Philly.
Wow.
And different places. And then we did that 6-week tour in the South, which was unbelievable because that was all, it was still during segregation.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you a question about that because, you know, I'm friendly with Mary Wilson and she used to tell me stories. She said, we used to have to stay on the bus. She said, and she told me this story and she said, one day, Diana, who she calls Diane, she said, got off the bus and said, I'm Diana Ross and I'm going into that diner and I am going to sit down and I'm going to be served. And she said she went in there and she made a big fuss and she said, I'm Diana Ross, I'm sitting down in the seat and I want to be served. She said, and they escorted her out, they threw her out and called her names. And Len Barry was on the bus and Len Barry went in there and he said, almost grabbed the guy by the back of the neck. And he threatened the guy and he told him, everybody from this bus is getting into this diner and they're going to eat and whatever. She says, but I remember that story. Len Barry made a big deal about it and got everybody into the diner. I said, but still, at that particular time, it must have been very tough going to the South.
It was worse for us because, remember, the Supremes came out...
Later. Right.
And so we were talking about the 50s. That was, before...
Right.
Any of them before the March on Washington and
right.
all that. And so we were traveling, we had to do shows in the basement of theaters for black people.
Wow.
And in the regular theater for the white people. We had to stay in these backstreet motels that were horrible.
And you couldn't walk in through the main entrance, I heard. You know, you had to go through the back. Yeah,
you couldn't do anything. And it was, we were from New York. We were not used to that.
You know, Herb Reed said to me once, he said, everybody made love to our music. Everybody cheered us when we were on the stage. And after the show, they didn't want to be near us, man. We had to eat somewhere. We had to eat in the bus. He said, isn't that kind of bittersweet? And I said, yeah.
Really interesting. I mean, same thing with the cover of Maybe.
Wow.
The cover of our first album, rather. The one with us with the orange dresses on. And the one that went down south was a jukebox.
They changed it. Yeah, they had a couple of white girls put money in a jukebox.
A white girl and a white boy. I'm looking at it right now because somebody gave it to me. They, a woman who was, they were cleaning out her apartment. She was going into a nursing facility because she was terminally ill, and they were clearing out and they found this album and they called me and said, I found this album and it's the Chantels, but it's not your album. It's the one, it has a jukebox and a white girl and a white boy. And I said, that's the one that went down south.
Wow, it was the Mason-Dixon version. Wow.
So I said, I would love to have it because, you know, it's part of my memorabilia.
Absolutely.
So, it was awful, you know, and having to, you know, go into the colored restrooms and before that and the white restrooms.
I want to ask you a question, though. You recorded He's Gone. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, second release was Maybe.
Right.
Did you know what you had? Can you think back to the recording studio and, you know, to that session? And I don't know how many takes you did, you know.
62 for Maybe.
I mean, that's a long night, you know. And, of course, if the drummer drops a stick, you got to start over. Because everybody goes at the same time.
That's right.
It wasn't like Pro Tools.
Breaks, then you got to wait till he restrings the guitar.
Yeah.
Somebody coughs, you got to wait till...
But
it was a long night, and plus, it didn't have the sound that Richard wanted.
Really?
And there's like three alternative takes to that have been released at different times or parts of, you know, when Lino and Warner the masters and did what they wanted with it. They have some of those alternate takes on the album.
Yeah.
But it was hard.
It's a long night because by the time you've sung it 15 times, it's like, you know, then it really starts to become work. And of course, you know, when you're singing that high, it's work. But my question is, did you know what you had when you finished that tune? Did you realize what you had, or did you say, oh my God, I'm glad to go home? Or did you say, wow, I think we have a hit?
want to go home. I'm tired. I have to get up and go to school tomorrow.
Right.
And I don't care if I never sing this song again.
Wow.
At least that's what I thought. I can only speak for my... But we were not. We were tired. We wanted to just go home and go to bed.
Wow.
And had not a clue.
Now, as I delved more and more into some of the stuff that I hadn't heard from the Chantels, you know, you know the top 5, 6, 8, 10 tunes, uh-huh. But then when you start delving into other stuff, I said to myself, oh my goodness, there are so many hits in here. Why weren't some of these tunes hits? And then, of course, the answer popped right into my head. You know, which is, and in those days, the record company was good at signing you and everything else,
mm-hmm.
but they really didn't know a lot about, okay, this, which song goes first, which song goes second,
right,
whatever.
Right.
There were a lot of politics involved in that, but I heard, as I listened, a lot of other hits in Chantel's material that should have been hits.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm sure you agree with me.
Oh, yeah, and you know, some things Richard would be really adamant about, you know, release this and release that, and he didn't always get listened to either, so.
Right. And the other thing that I noticed is that the Chantels went through an awful lot of labels, as did a lot of groups, you know, because sometimes, you know, they just don't know how to handle a group. I imagine that... For a girl group in those times, you know, they put the thrust into the guy groups or whatever,
right.
You know, because you were early on. I mean, the Shirelles weren't there yet, I don't think. And,
no, they weren't.
You know, and the Crystals weren't there. And so the really and truly, the Chantels were the forerunners of that sound.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but as I say, as I go through it, so many tunes should have been hits. There's a tune called It Took a Long Time. Do you remember that song?
Nope.
This was a tune that's somewhere in the archives of the Chantels, and I had never heard it, so I thought I would ask you about it. But I'm going to have to delve further into that. You know,
some of the things that are on some of these albums, we didn't record at all.
Ah.
So, I mean, there were a couple of things. And I said, we didn't record this.
Wow.
And they would put it under the Chantels, but it was another girl group, and I guess that didn't, it kind of nomad group that didn't really make it to a label or whatever.
Unbelievable. So,
somebody found it and just, you know, whatever was in the can, they just picked up.
Wow.
Said, oh,
so, I mean, you know, I thought only Phil Spector did that.
Well, other people did it too.
Unbelievable.
And that was probably after the Golna days, because, you know, once the record company went bust, which most some people I've read in who try to write stories about us without confirming things with us, said that the record company dropped us. They didn't drop us.
Right.
They dropped out and took our money with them.
I hear you because, well, you know, Terry Buzzy Johnson tells me stories about Goldner and Records and Gone Records, you know, and the fact that all of a sudden it wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and then they had to, you know, go do other things, you know.
Right. So it was you know, us, Isley Brothers, I think Gary Response was part of the Goldner establishment, his wife. Because she did a demo for a song that we did record.
Right.
And, anyway, yeah. So, you had the Ivory Brothers, the Anthony and the Imperials.
Right.
It was a whole bunch of us.
Oh, yeah, and I know. They had a lot of groups signed. And the Isleys, they were Jersey guys, if I remember.
They settled in Jersey.
Yeah, they settled in Jersey. Because I know I passed the house one time, and they said, "Oh, that's the Isleys' house. They have like a 24 car garage under the property or something." You know, I mean, unbelievable. So then, as things go by, then look in my eyes. Tell me about that.
In my eyes, that came about. I was not with the group then.
Right.
That was Jackie, Sonia, Renee, and Annette.
Uh-huh.
It was not Arlene. She did not record Look in My Eyes.
Right. Now, I would imagine that if you asked most people in the audience, they would probably assume that everybody was there and that Arlene was there as well.
Right.
But it just shows you how much talent was there that they could just... So Arlene went, I guess, to chase a solo career at that time. You had not sung with the group at that time, I guess, for whatever reason. You decided that it was time for you to take a rest?
Yeah, there was a hiatus between the time that the record company folded.
Right.
And we were very disappointed. We weren't sure what was going to happen. But Richard kept rehearsing the group.
Right.
And I did go to the rehearsals and whatnot, but then I had enrolled in med tech school, and so that was my priority at the time.
Right.
And I was taking courses at Bronx Community, and then, shortly after that, I had, met the guy who was going to be my husband.
Right.
And so things changed for me.
Right.
And the girl wanted to continue singing, and I said, that's fine,
Right.
I'll record with you, but I don't know that I can go on the road.
Right.
And so then they just carried on. And that was fine. I would go to their shows. They would be at the Apollo or different shows, different places that they would sing, and I would go and, support them.
Right.
And then I guess that was, I'm talking about late 60s, early 70s.
Right.
They really never stopped singing. Even they would do, local clubs and whatnot, but they never really stopped singing.
Right. In other words, they were always doing something because, there were so many tunes and really and truly, unless you really listen, you can't tell who's missing and who's not, who's there and who's not there only because, it was all Chantels, all Chantels all the time,
Right. Then after a while, the girls, when they did do recordings, Renee took the lead.
Right.
They had somebody else. They had different people in the group at different times.
Right.
And, they had one girl who came in I don't even know if she actually recorded with them, but she sang, one time with them, and then she was gone.
Gotcha.
And, but they, just kept singing. In the meantime, they were out of high school, Sonia went to to school. She became a teacher, and then she went on and became a special ed teacher.
Gotcha.
And so everybody kind of did their thing. Renee got into, she's been writing a column for the Amsterdam News.
Oh, wow. The Amsterdam News, wow.
Yeah, she's done that for years.
Wow. Well, you know, what's interesting is the first time that I met Arlene, and we had done a few shows with the Chantels when I was with Harmony Street, and, you know, over the years, you know, way back, and first time I sat down with Arlene, and we got to talking, and I said, you know, I teach in District 11, which is right back in Parkchester. She says, no kidding, I teach in District 8. I says, well, your superintendent is Max Messer. She said, you're right. I said, Max Messer was my camp counselor, I said, when up in the Catskills when I was like 13 years old. And we had a long talk about that and whatever. And then, you know, as I told you, I had done some shows with her after that. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, and, you know, I will say this, you know, it seems as if her demeanor had changed. So, you know, that's the only thing I'll say about it. She mm-hmm. seemed just a little, you know, a little less friendly and a little less personhood. And you know, I just said, okay, you know, whatever that is. And just, you know, whatever. That's all I'm going to say about it.
Right. Well, you know, I really didn't see much of her. I mean, I stayed in touch. Jackie and I stayed in touch because we were very close.
Right.
And so I knew what the girls were doing because of Jackie.
Right.
And then I was also part of when they incorporated the name.
Right.
So that, you know, we owned the name, you know, for years and years and years.
Right.
And so, you know, but nobody wanted to, you know, Arlene could go out and do her thing, and I hadn't seen her. I had not seen Arlene until, I'm trying to think of, I saw her 1995, I believe, when we right. got the United in Group Harmony Association award.
Right.
And then a year later we got the Rhythm and Blues Pioneer Award.
Right.
And that's when, you know, that's when I re-entered the group, because after the Rhythm and Blues Pioneer Award, we started getting a lot of calls about singing, and at the time we said, well, there's four of us, and there was always five of us.
Right.
And yeah, so we asked Arlene again, you know, if she would join us, because we were getting calls to sing and we really wanted to regroup and as the original group. And because Sonia and Renee had been carrying the torch.
Right,
for
right,
so many
right.
years, that we all decided, since we all, you know, I had long been out of nursing school and whatnot, and so we invited her, and she declined, and she was gracious about it.
Right.
So we said, okay, but just know that we are going to sing
right.
one way or the other.
Right. Now, the PBS special, when T.J. Lubinsky right. did the PBS stuff, I think everybody was there, if I'm not too correct.
Yeah, we were all there.
Great, great pleasure to introduce our original lead singer. Are you ready? Okay. Her name is Miss Arlene Smith.
Yeah.
band manager, Jackson, one of our members who has gone to another level. I know Jackie's up there smiling that smile, 'cause she always wanted to see us together. And so Jackie, there's never a maybe about our love for you. And we miss you. I know you know that too. Love. We love you. And we love you. Thank you so much for making Maybe the rock and roll classic that it is. The song belongs to you.
Yeah. I remember that. Well, you know, it's funny about TJ, you know, his father owned Savoy Records, and he was down, you know, he was doing local DJing in Florida, just doing little DJ jobs and whatever, and, you know, looking for work, and really didn't know that much about the music, but boy, he had a brainstorm. He really brought it back. So that, I guess that thing really worked.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Terry Stewart is a very good friend of mine. When Harmony Street had the pleasure and the honor, don't ask me how I pulled that off, we were the entertainment for Bill and Hillary at the White House in 98 at the Christmas party. And Terry saw us going on a Fox News feed that went back to Connecticut, going into the White House to sing. And he called us up and he wanted us to be the guests at his New Year's party in 98, 99. And we went there and I became friendly with him. So from that time on, I became very, very into, and, you know, through conversations, the whole Rock and Roll Hall of Fame thing. And then I realized how political it was, you know, as far as who's in, who's out, who's not, who's in, you know, and, you know, we even had a conversation about all the groups that really should be in and all the groups who are in who should not be in.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I can take it further because, you know, I'm always in the middle of the Dede Kinnebrew, Lala Brooks, Darlene Love, triad, you know, which who sang what and when and who's not telling the truth about this and that and yada yada yada, and then the smoke clears and Darlene is in the rock and the rest of the crystals are not in the rock, and you know, and it's, and you take a step back and you look and you say it's just all political. If you hang out with you know, certain people, and, you know, you want to hang with the Paul Schaefer crowd and the, you know, whatever.
Uh-huh.
Right now, there's a whole bunch of rockers who have a lot of pull in, who gets in and who doesn't. And they're shying more away from R&B and 50s groups.
Oh, yeah. They definitely are.
I mean, that's the Johnny Maestro thing. Terry said to me, well, you know, you got to remember, Johnny had a lot of East Coast hits. But if you went to California people, they only knew 16 Candles. They didn't know all the other tunes. And the other thing is, you know, he's nominated, and a lot of groups are nominated, but it's going to take a while because now they've moved on to the rockers.
Wow. You know.
Hi, this is Terry Stewart, CEO of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio. And you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on one of my favorite shows, the Harmony Street Show.
I guess it goes back to, well, it's all political. You know, they all just get up there and pat themselves on the back. And it's a political thing, because he told me stories about, you know, groups that should never have been in there, but were voted in. And he said, I only get one vote. He said, I can't sway anybody. You know, there's a whole big nominating committee and it's a whole process, you know, and it shakes out here. But, you know, I think the real thing is that when you're in the hearts and the minds of the people, and you know it too, you will get on stage with your group and you will take people back there to the Chantels, and after the show they will come and they will look into your eyes and they will tell you, you know, that you're the most wonderful person, and that they had a spiritual experience going back to, you know, listening to the Chantel's tunes.
Right.
And you gave them that. I go back, I Love You So. That should have been a giant hit. That should have been a top five hit, that song. And right down the line, Every Night I Pray. Eternally, I mean, you know. go through the tunes, and even hearing tunes that haven't heard in a long time or have heard like for the first time, my goodness, you recorded an awful lot of tunes.
Yep.
I mean, an awful lot of tunes.
And, you know, as far as the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I mean, that's, and we certainly know that that's a whole political thing. I mean,
right.
we've been nominated twice, we didn't get in, and, you know, other people have gotten in, and, you know, that's fine. But, you know, the one that meant more to us was the Vocal Group Hall of Fame.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what it's all about.
No,
we're a vocal group.
No, I agree with you.
So that to me was much more, and the Bronx Walk of Fame.
You know, the Vocal Group Hall of Fame, I mean, that's truer to the cause than the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know, I mean, really and truly, that's become a circus. And I even said that to Terry, you know, it's become a circus, pretty much. And so, you know, it's really like even Johnny told me before he passed away, he says, you know, it's not such a big deal. I'm over it. You know, I'm over it. I don't know if he meant it. Congratulations. Were you on that tune?
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's another great tune.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back, you know, say Cibón, that's a great arrangement.
Mm-hmm. But that, you know, that was us insisting that we do something like that because, again, it had that jazzy flavor, and we just like doing things that were different.
Cibón. Whisper this phrase. deja song. And if you only would be my own for the rest of my days, I will whisper this phrase. My darling, say Sibon.
Ellington at Newport. Dining with Cherry. Flying with Sinatra. Care to join me?
Right.
And any chance we got to do something, we have a wonderful arrangement of It's Not For Me To Say.
Right.
But, we don't get to sing it much.
Right. And did you record that?
We did not record it.
Uh-huh.
Which we really wanted to when we did that CD in 2010. We did Bésame Mucho in Spanish, but we wanted to do It's Not For Me To Say, and for whatever reason it just didn't.
Right. Well, it took me a while to track down Johnny Mathis, and, you know, I did a long, long interview with him. We talked about everything on this planet. And Paul Vance, who wrote about 15 tunes for Johnny, lives in Boca down here, you know. Mm-hmm. And I became very friendly with John, and he's a special guy, and he just goes on and on. And that was a thrill to get him to stop and give me some time and talk to him. You know, which is interesting, you know, the Times, Caesar from the Times did Wonderful, Wonderful. He says, you know, we never met Johnny Mathis, and we did three of his tunes, so I got Johnny to send him an autographed picture, you know, and he wrote Wonderful, Wonderful on it, and Caesar talks about it every day. And I said, you know, it's amazing that you reach a pinnacle, but there's always somebody that's on a different pinnacle, you know.
Uh-huh,
it's
uh-huh.
Amazing, you know. I mean, I'm still, look, I got to do rock and roll shows with all of my heroes and everything, but I still become tongue-tied, you know, with certain people. You know, it's amazing. Now, you also recorded Memories of You, and that's a very interesting version. I wondered if Raul Cedar wrote. I think Raul Cedar did write that tune because I spoke. As a matter of fact, I believe it or not, there's a book out. I don't know if you read it. It's called 7-inch Vinyl.
No.
It's by Don Riggio, and it's a book that's about this fictional group called the Duquesnes, and they had this fictional record, a couple of records, and the record was Bouncing a Kiss Off the Moon, and then they have a cover to That's the Way It Goes. So Don said to me, I said, there should be the tunes. Make them come alive. He says, why don't you do them? So I wrote the tunes. I recorded them in my studio. It's all me and, you know, doing all the parts and the music. And, you know, they're on iTunes and they're on Amazon and they go along with the book. And believe it or not, it's a fabulous book about the genre. And it's going to be a trilogy. They're on the second, he's on the second book. And, what I'm going to do is, I'm going to have him send you a copy of the book. So it's a really nice book. So at one point we'll talk and I'll have Don send you one. You'll enjoy the book.
John Clementi's new book, the second edition of the one that he did, The Girl Group?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I have. And, you know, of course, you know, when you think back to the wave of girl groups and a lot of talented girl groups, you know, and to think that really and truly, I mean, you know, we had the McGuire sisters, but then came the Chantels, and there wasn't that really before the Chantels. Not out there on the charts. Not out on the pop charts.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one or two on the R&B charts, but not in the pop charts.
Mm-hmm.
So that really is, you know, the credit to the Chantels. And really and truly, you girls should get all of the credit for that. It's just how it is. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or not.
I hope that we do get some credit. I was going to tell you something, and I did. It just went right out of my head.
Oh.
That's the problem of being a
singer. Well, I call that CRS. You know CRS?
No.
I have CRS, and I said it at the
beginning. Oh, yeah. I remember what that is.
Can't remember. Can't remember stuff.
Right.
I can't remember stuff. Yeah.
But,
you know.
Yes.
Let me ask you this. What's your favorite Chantel's tune?
Oh, my goodness. Probably Whoever You Are.
Ah.
What made you?
I know both of those tunes. That's great. Now, you know, most people would think that you would have chosen something different.
I don't know. They just make me feel good. Those two songs.
All right.
The harmony is beautiful. They're just really pretty songs. Sad that they are, but they're really pretty.
Well, you need those tunes. And tell me about the Chantels right now.
Oh, let's see. Right now, we're still working.
Right. And who's in that group?
Three originals.
Uh-huh.
We lost Jackie.
Right.
You know, it's 97.
Right.
And we didn't want to replace her, so we stayed. We said we would stay as four.
Uh-huh.
And, well, three at the time, and then right. we got Amy.
Right.
So it's Renee, minus White, Sonia, right. William, with Goring Wilson.
Right.
And me. And then Amy, we kind of, she's an accidental Chantel.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
We met her at Ronnie, I, and Sandy's wedding.
Oh, how interesting.
And at the reception, Sonia, we had, I can't remember, Sonia was living in Florida at the time. And we had gotten the award. And we had done a couple of shows for, no, we hadn't done any shows for Ronnie yet. I'm trying to remember the sequence of things.
Right.
And we were getting calls, and Ronnie, you know, would say, drop hints like, you know, I sure wish you all, you know, had it together and you would just do a show or whatever.
Right.
And so we got invited to the reception, and we're sitting there, and Sandy came over and asked us if we would sing Ronnie's favorite song, and I think it was I Love You So, but I can't remember. But it was one of our songs.
Well, I'm going to ask Sandy.
And we
because I keep in touch with her all the time.
So I said, gee whiz, you know, how are we going to do that? You know, it's just Renee and Jackie and me.
Right.
And if Renee takes the lead, then it's just Jackie and me. There's a hole.
Right.
So Sandy said, well, you know, my best friend knows all of your songs.
Ah.
And I'm thinking, okay. Oh, she said, she's right over here. How about you just go in the kitchen and see if you can do it? So we went in the kitchen, and she knew every word. And it sounded like she had been singing with us forever.
Wow.
It was a perfect blend. We said, okay, we'll do it. And I think Danny Beagleman was there with the Ronnie I, you know, the band, I think, maybe.
Right.
I'll say Johnny Stampinato because that's his other name.
Right.
His name. I can't remember the drummer and the keyboardist. But anyway, so
yeah.
So they were all, they were there.
Yeah.
I just remember there was a band.
Okay.
And I just remember because Danny became, you know, when we got to know them once we started singing again. And so we got up, we sang, and everybody was, like, clapping, and Ronnie was ecstatic. And so he said, well, looks like you have a group.
Yeah, it looks like it.
So, and then like I said, we were getting calls, and Ronnie said, boy, I could have you on the next one. You know, you could be one of the performers for the next award thing,
right.
Blah, blah, blah. And so that was it.
Wow.
He became one of the Chantels.
Wow.
He was 26 then, and she's been with us for over 17 years.
Wow. Great story. So, you know, and of course, you girls are doing shows and you're active. And let me ask you this. Are you interested in going back into the studio, or are you just happy going out and singing to the people?
We would love to go back into the studio, but, you know, we you know, everybody is living on, well, at least us.
Right.
You know, everybody's on these limited budgets.
Yep.
Incomes, and, you know, because I retired, and Sonia retired.
Right.
And so, you know, trying to get into the studio. I know.
Lenny Welch said to me, I wouldn't go into the recording studio again if you gave me $1 million. I just want to go out and sing. Mel Carter, who's his buddy, said, I record like three tunes a week. So, you know, it's like I want and everybody said, well, what do you do with the tune when you record it? What are you going to do, put it on Amazon and make 99 cents or give it to collectibles and make less than 99 cents? I mean, what are you going to do with it? You know, they're not selling 45s anymore. People are not even buying discs. They're downloading them.
Right.
You know, so how do you sell music if you're not Miley Cyrus? And our baby boomers, they will love to hear it, and they'll download it from YouTube, but they're just not going to click on the 99 cents.
Right.
They
exactly.
don't. So it's like, if you do it, you do it because you want to be creative, and you do it because, you know, nobody certainly in our genre is doing it because they think they're going to make sell a million records.
Right, right. And that's something that's very difficult to get across to.
Of course.
So, I mean, that's the problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there's the exploitation factor because just like not a couple of years ago, we were in the same position and found ourselves, you know, once again behind the eight ball.
And not only that, and so you record something and of course, you know, 3 weeks later, going to bootleg it anyway and sell it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how it is. But, you know, whatever.
So, you know, unless if we do record, it would be for, you know, a product that we could sell at the shows that we do.
Yeah. Oh, and of course you could do that too. You know, I mean, you know, whatever. But, you know, I built the studio here and I do this just, you know, I had some surgery about a month ago and I'm still healing. It's going to take about another 2 months. It was a stomach thing and it's really, I can't even take a deep breath. So, you know, when you get into your 60s, man, it's like, you know, it's like.
Oh, wait till you get to your 70s.
Yeah. Oi. But anyway.
Actually, I'm more active now than I was in my 60s.
No, I hear you.
Tai Chi and circuit training.
No, you were telling me.
Singing with the two choruses and
I know. You know, you're a tough lady to pin down. What would you say, Lois, to fans of yours who have followed the Chantels right from the very first record and have been fans of the Chantels and have come to see you over the years? What would you say to those people right now today?
I would say to them that I am forever grateful for their loyalty, because never in my wildest dreams did I think that people would still be listening to what we recorded as babies, teenagers, today in the 21st century. It just blows my mind.
Wow.
It just amazes me. I'm not surprised on one level because, you know, people look back to this music as the happiest time in their lives. So I understand that piece, but to compute in my own head that something we did back in 1957 is still alive and well in the hearts of people, and they follow us wherever we go, and their admiration is just so humbling to me.
Wow.
That I don't even know how to say thank you.
No, and I certainly understand that, and I will tell you this, as far as being a fan, when I met my wife, Paulette, and we're together 7 years now, we found each other. And when you find each other at this stage in life, it's really special. In her living room, I saw in the corner a 57 Seberg jukebox loaded with 45s, and she has every Chantel's hit. And when she hits them randomly, you know, I would say that out of 10 songs that she pops, probably 3 of them are Chantel's tunes, and it holds 200 records. There were probably 8 or 10 Chantel's 45s in there. And, you know, that's part of the story, that you're part of people's lives, and, you know, what you gave everybody lives on, and people hold those tunes very near and dear.
Like I said, I am just so grateful. I went to a play in D.C. It is now on Broadway, called, at the time it was One Night with Janis Joplin. On Broadway, it's A Night with Janis Joplin.
Right.
And in it, I knew Janis had recorded Maybe, but I had no idea that we were one of the influences in her life.
Wow.
And she talks about the Chantels, and I was floored when I, and not only does she talk about it in the first act, she talks about us, and then she talks about us again in the second act, and she sings Maybe.
And you didn't even see it coming.
And it was, my cousin saw it and told me that she talked, there's something about the Chantels, but you have to see it. So she got the tickets and took me to see it. And, when she finished singing Maybe, I had heard her rendition of, Joplin's rendition of it, and I just said, man, that is like a whole different world of Maybe, but I loved it.
Wow.
When Bridget Davies finished singing Maybe, I was on my feet before I even knew I was out of my chair.
Wow.
And she turned and bowed to me.
Wow.
And I bowed back to her.
Wow.
And it was like, and then she and Kim Yarbrough wanted to meet me.
Wow.
So we did. We met. So now she's on Broadway.
See where you started? If people want to get in touch with you or get in touch with the Chantels, mm-hmm. either to book you or to tell you how much that they love the Chantels, how would they do that?
www.thechantels.com. Thechantels.com. Or they can. We have a Facebook page, The Legendary Chantels.
Okay, great. This has been fabulous for me because I just have always loved and worshipped the Chantels. They're part of what made this genre of music what it is. And I just want to say, Lois Harris Powell, thank you so much for spending time with me.
Oh, you're so welcome, Mike. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, Open up your heart, recall how it used to be, remember all the love we found. Ooh.
On Harmony Street, there was a place that we used to go when we were feeling down and we were low. We looked into each other's eyes and found the road that led us to Harmony Street. Baby.